So I think we'll get started with our program. And as I see that the ice cream is kind of going down. So I want to thank everybody for being at the University of Alaska Fairbanks 11th Annual Women's Faculty Luncheon. So this is my 7th luncheon, I think, and it's really neat to be able to walk around and see everybody that you've learned, you know, that you only maybe see at the luncheon, and hug people and wish them well and see how they're doing, and everybody's changing. So it's such a nice group to be a part of. Before we begin, and I should have done this at the beginning, but we have to have our safety minute. So in the event of an emergency, please use the back entrance exits. The restrooms are around the corner, outside and around the corner, and I heard that the showers are really nice in there. And always remember that our wellness center is located downstairs now in the Wood Center. It's been there for about a year now. So today our room comprises nearly 100 amazing people. We come together today to get to know each other, to celebrate our accomplishments, and discover the strength of community, and enjoy great food and great ice cream. The information and good vibes for today are being broadcast and recorded using something called ZoomLink to folks who could not be in Fairbanks today. So can everybody say hi to people who have to be from a distance? Say hello! my name is Ellen Lopez. And with Jane Weber, who's sitting over there, Jane, I co-chair the Faculty Senate Committee on the Status of Women. It is through this committee that we offer this luncheon and several other activities throughout the year, including conversation cafes and our Spring Tenure and Promotion for Success workshop that a lot of you come to, and a lot of you have been on our panel, so thank you very much. Could all this Committee on the Status of Women members please stand up to be recognized? I want to give a special thank you to Jane Harvey, our Faculty Senate Coordinator and Union of Governance Officer Manager. Jane is always selfless about providing support to us for this luncheon and throughout the year. It's wonderful. Thank you. Also to Sarah Scrupp from the Provost Office for working with us today. And to, And to Nicole Dufour, the Staff Council Office, for helping make today possible. I also have the pleasure to welcome and recognize and thank several individuals who support this luncheon and our efforts to focus on success of women at UAF. So first of all, I'd like to introduce and welcome our new interim chancellor, John Power. Thank you. Mike Power, oh my God. Sorry, I'm nervous. Sorry, and I met you yesterday. Our provost and executive vice chancellor for Academic Affairs, Susan Hendricks. Our vice provost and our speaker today, Alex Boltz. Our vice chancellor for University and Student Advancement, Max Berger. Vice chancellor for Administrative Services and Executive Officer, Kara Burrow. Kara Burrow. Our Associate Vice Chancellor, Chris Messina. The Director of Faculty Development, who is very much a part of helping our Women's Center, Joan Morrison. The Director of Summer Sessions, Michelle Bartlett. And our Interim Dean of Libraries, Susan Hahn. Welcome. And I'm sorry if I missed anybody who you feel should be, but you're all welcome here. You're all very special. So like I said, today we're here for many reasons, and one is to celebrate our success as UAF faculty. So in this regard, please let us congratulate you if in the last year you were promoted to full professor,
Anybody?
Yay!
Yay!
If you receive tenure and or are promoted to associate professor, if you are a new faculty member of the faculty or administration,
anybody new?
Welcome! Welcome! If you received any honors or awards this year, hey, everybody! Yeah. If you published first chapters, books, or scripts,
yay! Yeah!
If you mentored students through their theses or dissertations, hey. If you are able to figure out what faculty you may be, everybody, yay! I also congratulate you. Another reason we come together is to create community. And that's what I see happening over the years. We create community. In a time when we are constantly reminded that we need to do more with less, it's important to literally see and be among all the wonderful strengths and resources we do have at the university. I hope you enjoy meeting and chatting with folks from all across the university's campus. So, I want to introduce to you Alex Fitz, our speaker. Alex joined UAF in the Department of Foreign Languages and Literature about 20 years ago. She started in 1995. This was after her MA in political science, her MA in Spanish, and a PhD in Romance Languages, with a certificate in Latin American and Women's Studies. She's done many things, but now she served for 6 years as the chair of the Department of Foreign Languages and for 3 years as the coordinator of the Women and Gender Study Program. As she continues to work on her Spanish and working in Women and Gender Studies, Alex serves now as the university's vice provost, accreditation liaison officer, dean of general studies, and I think you were just offered the position of chief of police, right? Yeah. Well, this is beyond remarkable. What is most impressive about Alex is her calm demeanor, her happy disposition at all times, even when I run into her at Fred Meyer's on a Sunday afternoon. I personally cannot think of a better role model for myself or other faculty. And I certainly can't think of any individual I've been wanting to introduce. Having said this, I'm greatly honored to introduce you, Alex Fitz, our 2015 Faculty Women's Luncheon Speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. That was such a nice introduction. First, let me say that this is really an honor for me. I've been here, I don't think I've been to all 11 because I was on sabbatical at one point, but I've been to 9 or 10 of these probably as a faculty member, as a member of the Committee on the Status of Women, as co-chair of the Committee on the Status of Women. And so being invited to speak to this group really means a lot to me, and I appreciate it. I won't tell you too much more about who I am or what I do. I'll get into a little bit of personal stuff later, but not too much. But it was 20 years ago that I came to Alaska. I came after having done a series of telephone interviews, so I had actually never been to Alaska before. And I took this as my first job straight out of graduate school and thought, oh, it'll be a great first job. It'll be an adventure. I'll stay for a few years and build up my resume. And here I am, because I love it here. As Vice Provost, I do wear a few different hats. Part of being Vice Provost is doing what the Provost asks me to do, but part of it is being Dean of General Studies, which, if you don't know, are all of the students who don't have a declared major. accreditation. I work with program review, student learning outcomes, and I do work with Faculty 180 as well. So you can call me about that. Second, what I'd like to do is to congratulate all of the women faculty once again. I won't make you stand up again, but real hearty congratulations to everyone who was promoted this year and or tenured. Well done. I read the ad from the News Miner on Sunday, and I meant to bring it in here and hold it up and say, look at this, but I think I left it in my car or something because I can't find it. But the count that I made looking at that ad in the News Miner was that 11 of the 16 people promoted to full professor were women. Yay. obviously, it's not a competition, and there is still room for improvement in terms of seeing women promoted, but I think that's just a wonderful thing to see and a great sign of the direction that the university is heading. So, being a good academic, I thought, I can't possibly talk about myself for 15 minutes or so, so I'm going to do a little research. So I did a little research, I read some articles, I picked out a few things that I wanted to talk about. I will talk about myself a little bit along the way, but kind of more in the do what I say and not what I do mode. But I was giving some thought to what I wanted to talk about, and I read an article that really piqued my interest. And this was a piece on academic deans and the path to leadership to the deanship for women versus men. It was published in Diversity and Democracy, which is a publication of the Association of American Colleges and Universities, in their spring 2015 issue. It was called Gender and the Ladder to the Deanship. So other speakers at this event I know have talked about the academic pipeline, while women outnumber men at the undergraduate level, and even at the as graduate students and as assistant professors in some fields, particularly in humanities and education, only slightly more than 25% of full professors nationally are women, something around the same percentage for university presidents. UAF's numbers are comparable, or as we've seen this year, even slightly better than the national averages. So I asked Sally to pull these for me yesterday so we could see where UAF stands right now. So if we're talking about tenure track for tenured faculty, assistant professors were 47% female, 53% male. Associate professors, 44% female, 56% male. So pretty comparable and not a whole lot of drop-off between the assistant and the associate professor level. And then at the professor level, 31% female, 69% male. So that's where you start to see some discrepancy. As I said, this year does not fit into that pattern, so maybe we're going to see that number creeping up. So going back to this article that I read that interested me, it was a study on deans. And this study did assume that a deanship is a natural path to leadership in academia, which I think is not necessarily the case, but it's one of the paths. And it looked at 212 deans, in this case of colleges of arts and sciences. Roughly 40% of the respondents were women and 60% were men. There was, and this was a little bit of a surprise to me, very little difference between the men and the women in terms of factors like age, marital status, how long they'd been in their position before they became a dean. But there were two pretty interesting differences to me in their responses. One was in the percentage of them who aspired to go on to be a university president, and the women were much less likely to aspire to that position. And the other disparity that I found intriguing was the response to a question about whether they had actively sought out their first academic administrative position. And only, 73% of women said that they had not. And it was only about 50% of men said that they had sought it out. But there were many more men who had sought out their deanship than women. Women reported being more likely to have been recruited or to have stepped into a position to fill a perceived need than to have planned a career trajectory that led to becoming a dean. And this no doubt relates back to the other question that was answered in the survey about women being less likely to report wanting to become a university president. Women in this study were less likely to have laid out an ambitious, and I'm putting air quotes around ambitious, career path for themselves, am more likely to have moved into a leadership position through indirect means. So what to make about this? And here I'll talk about myself a little bit. I certainly did not set out to become an administrator. That was not the career path that I imagined for myself when I started graduate school. And when I'm in my office doing something like plugging data into an Excel spreadsheet or calling HR about a hiring process or something, I think, you know, my training in Latin American literature really did not prepare me for this. I became department chair, probably as many other people do, because there just weren't very many tenured people in my department, and it seemed like it was my turn to do it. Even my current position, I would say I ended up in this position through contacts that I made through university service, more than thinking 10 years back, I want to be vice provost, and how am I going to get there? So I don't know if that means that I'm less ambitious, but I think that we need to think about what does that word mean, right? And what kinds of paths can lead to leadership at the institution. My entire academic career, I have to say, has been following this pattern a little bit. I was not at all sure what I wanted to study as an undergraduate. I actually started out as a business administration major and lasted for about half of one semester. And then I ended up, as Ellen said, graduating with a degree in political science, thinking maybe I would go to law school or maybe go into government. And then my last year in college, I ended up doing a study abroad. And I went to a small college, and this was in the 80s before study abroad was quite as common as it is now. And so we had three choices. I could go to France, England, or Spain. And I'd taken a couple of years of Spanish, so I said, okay, I'm going to go to Spain. And that decision really changed my life. It was the first time I'd been out of the country. It was the first time I'd seriously encountered another culture. It was the most fun I'd ever had, probably. There was a little bit of that in my decision. But I graduated from college then genuinely really unsure about where I wanted to go with my life. I did not go to law school. I drifted into a couple of sort of dead-end jobs. And I went on a visit to see some friends at my old college, and I went to see my professor who had led the study abroad experience that I'd been on the year before. And I broke down crying in his office. And he asked me the question, well, what do you really want to do? And I sort of blubbered, I want to go to Spain. And he said, well, have you thought about going to graduate school? And I hadn't. But he suggested a program in Spanish that I could do in Madrid, and this was April. I hadn't taken the GRE. I had the bare minimum of credits in Spanish to be able to go into a graduate program in Spanish, sort of the equivalent of a minor, probably. I really didn't know what getting a master's in Spanish entailed or what it would prepare me to do in life, but I applied to this program. And I returned to Spain. I got my master's degree. And while I was there, I discovered that I genuinely did have a passion for Spanish culture and particularly for literature. And from there, I was able to make a much more informed decision about where I want to go for my PhD and research programs. But still, I think, and probably this is the case for many people, I think I entered my PhD program without a really great understanding of what that meant in terms of not just what I would be doing for the next few years there, but what your career looks like after that. So this feels a little confessional because I have to say that I've always been a little bit embarrassed about my own lack of career plan and my somewhat reckless approach. But I do use it when I want to talk to students who are upset because they feel like they need to know at 19 exactly what they're going to do with their lives. And I talk to them about the fact that most of us are going to change at some point. At 19, you don't have to know. You need to know what do you want to do now? What grabs your passion? So to bring this out of the realm of the personal and back into what I was talking about ambition and the path to academic leadership, what I was wondering was, does the discrepancy in the number of women deans and in the number of women who actively seek out administrative positions indicate an institutional barrier to women's success? Are women less ambitious? And again, with the quotes. And if so, why? is it actually okay to have a more circuitous or serendipitous path and to be open to multiple definitions of leadership? And I certainly hope so in a self-validating way. Or perhaps most importantly, are women really just being kind of sensible by deciding not to pursue positions that are stereotypically leadership positions? There may be other ways to be leaders in academia, as there are in other areas. And I certainly don't want to give the impression that all faculty members do or should aspire to administration. In fact, I'm sure that many of you ardently aspire to never be an administrator. But this leads me to the second article that I want to talk about. It's a little bit older. It's from 2013 from the Chronicle of Higher Education. And this one's called Women in Academic Leadership Leaning Out. So I guess if we're going to talk about leaning out, I need to talk a little bit about leaning in. So how many of you are familiar with that book? Have either read it or heard enough about it that you kind of know what it's about? I have to admit, I had not read it. And when I was thinking about this talk, I thought, okay, well, I can't talk about leaning out unless I'm going to actually read the book and figure out what it's about. So I read it. And the author, Sheryl Sandberg, proposes that there are not more women leaders in the corporate world because women lean away from their careers. They assume they cannot have a family or a healthy work-life balance and a successful career, so they don't take on some of the challenging roles that would lead to new positions or promotions. She states that insecurity, self-doubt, and the desire to be liked are so ingrained in women and in our culture's view of women that women often do not trust their own abilities and may subconsciously hinder their own success. So clearly, based on the book's popularity, these ideas struck a chord in a lot of women who embraced that message. Others pushed back at her focus on the need for change by individual women over an examination of institutional and cultural norms. According to Sandberg, if women just speak up, sit at the big table, drive a hard bargain, and stand up for ourselves, we will succeed. And I have to admit that I'm not very good at some of those things. And I saw myself in that criticism, and it did lead to some self-reflection. But the larger question that Sandberg largely leaves unaddressed is why we should have to do those things. Her acceptance of the hard-driving, deal-brokering, 60, 70, 80-hour-a-week norm as a prerequisite for success presumes that women who do not aspire to such a life are held back by their own inadequacies or by a lack of ambition. Many of Sandberg's critics called instead for an examination of a system that expects stereotypically masculine behavior and its effect on the women and the men who do conform to it. And I want to stress the stereotypically there because I do not want to give the impression that I believe that women are innately more collaborative or more kind or that men are more competitive and more ambitious, but really that we should question the notion of what a good leader is and whether a good leader absolutely has to be one of those things regardless of their gender. So this article in the Chronicle states that, and this is a quote, many mid-career academic women opt to forgo promotion and leadership positions in anticipation of messy politics, sexist cultures, or irreconcilable challenges between work and family life. The result is that women get stuck in mid-level positions and fewer women than men occupy the corner offices on campus. Is this because academic women don't lean in? The authors go on to argue that academic women may not lean in, may in fact actively lean out, because they recognize that the academy rewards precisely the type of ideal worker that Sandberg talks about. Someone willing to work long hours, dedicate themselves wholly to the institution, and face unceasing scrutiny, which I'm sure our provost, our chancellor, so many of the people in this room can relate to. Women may indeed choose not to pursue this career path, but rather than attribute that reluctance to self-doubt or a misguided abnegation, we should consider whether the institution has fostered a climate that makes leadership positions seem incompatible with personal goals and a healthy work-life balance. So yes, women may be reluctant to lean in, and for that reason, they may not actively pursue all of the leadership opportunities that are open to them, but they may also have good reason to be wary. Rather than ask women or men to conform to that stereotypical ideal worker, the institution itself needs to take certain steps to encourage more people to step into leadership roles that fit with their personal and career objectives. So I'd like to lay out some of the steps that are mentioned in this article. None of them are groundbreaking. They're things that have been discussed, I think, probably in this very gathering on other occasions. But to think about ways that UAF is doing these things where there might be still room for improvement. So one of the ways to foster this environment in which more people can see leadership as an attractive path. Promotion to associate and full professor. Policies need to be clear and transparent. We need to remember that career development does not end with tenure. There should be practices to engage women at all points in their career. This committee, as Ellen mentioned, puts on an annual workshop and panel on preparing for promotion and tenure that I think a lot of us have participated in before. There's still room for improvement in this arena, but this year's slate of new full professors is really an encouraging sign. So, number two, awareness of available resources and programs for advancement. It's important for women to know about campus policies and, when necessary, to push for changes where they are needed. Know about your unit criteria, the Blue Book guidelines for promotion and tenure, the expectations of your discipline and department, and then most importantly, advocate for change where you see unequal treatment or practices that you disagree with. Number three are leadership development programs. Here at UAF, we have the Academic Leadership Institute run by the provost, and I encourage anyone who's interested to apply, whether you're considering moving into a leadership position or not. I think it's a good way to meet other people who are kind of in that same stage of their career as you, but also it's a good opportunity to think about what leadership means to you, what it means to the academy, how well those things fit together. I think I'm on number four. Mentoring that includes men and women. So I do think that there are certain situations where having specifically a woman mentor might be helpful, but there's also no reason why women can't mentor men, men can't mentor women. We should be able to learn from our colleagues, no matter what the gender. And lastly, leaders who model supportive treatment of their colleagues and subordinates. We can't believe in a different sort of leader until we see one. As you all have stepped into or do in the future step into leadership positions, be aware of the example that you're setting for your colleagues and your students. I went to a workshop one time, and I can't even remember what it was about, but this topic came up, and someone was talking about the fact that she had a realization that when she sent emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, she was sending them several messages, right? That to do my job, it's necessary to stay up all night, that it's appropriate to work all night, that I expect the people that work for me to answer me at 3 o'clock in the morning. And she just took the simple step of setting a timer on her email so that nothing went out until 8 o'clock in the morning. It's a simple thing, but it models the kind of leadership, or for me anyway, you can think about whether it's the kind of leadership that you want to. So some of these things occur on an institutional level. Many are things that we already do. Some are things we could do better. It's no secret to anyone here that UAF has gone through and will continue to go through some challenging times. With financial pressures come uncertainty and anxiety. As we have fewer people to do the work of educating our students and less funding for generating our research and scholarly activity, we all feel like we have less time to devote to our professional development, let alone to think about what we could do to make the institution better for ourselves and our colleagues. But this is precisely the time when we should be thinking about how we can make our working environment better and what we can all do. I'll be delighted to hear about ideas if you have them. I'm sure the provost would as well. So to wrap up and to try to put these ideas together, numbers do reflect that not as many women are in traditional leadership positions, full professor, department chair, dean, provost, chancellor, president, and those numbers kind of go down as you go along that pathway. In some cases, and I don't think at UAF, I certainly hope not, but clearly there are discriminatory practices that have held women back from those positions. But there may be other less overt reasons. Maybe subtle sexism in hiring, mentoring, departmental policies. These should be identified and eliminated. But it may also be the case that women are less ambitious. But all of that with a grain of salt. They may be less ambitious because traditional leadership roles are not appealing to people who want a healthy work-life balance. If this is the case, we need to consider ways that we can make small changes and model the type of leaders that we want to see, and to make space for those kinds of leaders. One dictionary definition of ambition is, quote, a desire to be successful, powerful, or famous. So you can see why some people shy away from that, right? Sure, successful, but powerful and famous, maybe not. But think about other ways to define that for yourselves. So yes, leaning in makes sense, sometimes. Only if we have created an environment that sensible people want to lean into. We also need to allow for multiple definitions of leadership and pathways for getting there. Another dictionary definition for ambition is a particular goal or aim, something that a person hopes to achieve. By doing precisely the sort of things that truly make one a good leader at this institution, teaching passionately, pursuing new avenues of research, engaging in opportunities to collaborate with colleagues and students, taking steps to improve UAF through service and advocacy, we are leading and may discover paths that we haven't considered before. Thank you. And thank you for the chance to.
So feel free to enjoy whatever ice cream you've left and each other. And thank you so much for coming today. This is wonderful.
Thank you.